Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes!
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
This crowd is singing high.
Not the final out, you know, but it's close enough. So it is the High Hopes Podcast. I'm not doing the Seltzer Yo. I never do the Seltzer Yo. But, of course, it is the High Hopes Podcast presented by Miller Lite. And since I'm off this week, I don't have to do the final out. But we still want to do some post-game shows because the Phils are playing. There's stuff to talk about. And Seltzer is long gone in his sleep journey tonight, which means the one and only Tucker Bagley joins the program, our esteemed producer and superstar behind the scenes. Tucker, how you doing, pal?
I'm excited because normally we have to wait for Murph and then we get to do the postgame show. I'm excited we get to cut that out. We'll be, you know, in bed 20 minutes earlier, which, as I know, the co-host of this podcast has to be super excited about the next time he goes to sleep.
He does.
The number one role of this spot right here.
Yeah, the most important part about the High Hopes Podcast is going to bed. That is the most
That's
important.
What they say.
Like, who cares about the baseball team? Let's all make sure that we can go to bed. One person who did not go to bed tonight in a timely fashion was Walker Fritz, who I might have listened to the entire game on the radio until about the seventh inning, but just driving the kid around. So listen, it was for a pretty nondescript July 7th game, Tucker. There was a lot of little things to talk about with this game. I will say it feels like the story of this one. We'll get to some of the nonsense late. Sure seems like Zach Wheeler's upset about not being on the All-Star team and maybe a little annoyed at Don Mattingly over what happened last weekend against the Pirates. What was your big takeaway from Wheels tonight?
I mean, it was just a classic Zach Wheeler performance. I mean, like, you and James joked about it this morning. Like, oh, well, let's see, you know, how he'll look after he got taken out early last week and he didn't make the All-Star team, which they clarified a few times on the broadcast tonight that he initially wasn't picked for the All-Star team because he's going to pitch on Sunday leading into it. And they passed over him again today in favor of Jesus Luzardo for the same reason, which I always think is a little ridiculous. Like, just make him an All-Star and then move on to the next guy. Like, it's crazy to just kind of not let that guy get that accolade. But, I mean, 7 innings, 14 strikeouts, 0 walks, 6th pitcher in Philly's history to post a line like that. I mean, just an utterly dominant performance from start to finish. And after you saw what Christopher Sanchez went through yesterday, and really the whole team, it was good to kind of just give the bullpen a rest. You did have to use some high-leverage guys. It did get sticky at the end. But for 7 innings, he was in complete control.
Well, it was nice being able to hand the ball to Zach Wheeler after a game where you lose 15-1 to the freaking Royals. Like, just being able to be like, okay, let's calm this whole thing down. And I totally agree with you on the All-Star thing. This should not be this complicated. And we know how important making All-Star games are for not only bonuses, future contracts, things like that, but when we're trying to make a Zach Wheeler Hall of Fame case, it's going to suck that we can't say 2026 as a Hall of Fame or as a part of that resume. He deserves to be an All-Star. And
do you know how many All-Star teams he's made in his
three.
Career?
Three. And what are two of them with? Did he make one as a Met? I mean,
no, 2021, 24, and 25.
Yeah, so they've all been with the Phillies. He's turned into a Hall of Fame caliber pitcher with the Phillies. Will he make it in? As it stands right now, probably not, but he's starting to put together a pretty impressive resume. I just, Major League Baseball has done a lot of things right in the last couple of years. This is something that makes no sense. I don't understand how you can't make the guy an All-Star, say, hey, we know he can't pitch, but he still deserves to be here. just because he happens to have to throw on the Sunday before the All-Star game. That's the only reason why he's not an All-Star. That seems ridiculous. Seems ridiculous, Tucker.
Yeah, it's crazy that, like, oh, sorry, you can't be an All-Star because of a scheduling conflict. Like, it just makes no sense. And you mentioned, like, for someone like him, you know, it's always funny when All-Stars come out and, you know, you have a few guys who maybe make it that shouldn't. And, you know, maybe with the fan vote or whatever, and people say, well, you know, it's an All-Star. It doesn't really matter. Like, well, it does. Like you said, for the main reason for Zach Wheeler, when he retires 6 years after that, and people start to look at his baseball reference page and decide whether or not he's worthy of a Hall of Fame induction, they're going to look at it and say, like, well, he only made the All-Star team three times. Like, that isn't that impressive. But it's four seasons where he was top 10 in Cy Young voting, three seasons when he was top five in Cy Young voting. And, you know, you look at what he did in the postseason in, you know, his 3 years pitching in the playoffs with the Phillies. I mean, it's utterly insane what he's done to not have the kind of accolades that he deserves.
I know. And I think we as fans of the team, and obviously we pull for Zach Wheeler because he's our guy, but it feels like we as fans have to do some of the heavy lifting here to almost slam it in people's faces, like how much you have to appreciate how good Zach Wheeler is and how he has morphed into Verlander and Scherzer. It's just he does not have the 20s that those guys had. You know, those guys had longer periods of time, but like the way he's pitching right now is just the way that those guys pitch late into their careers. And, you know, Scherzer somehow still going, Verlander still going, Verlander a sneaky trade deadline target, just kidding. but yeah, I just to him finishing runner up a couple times now, and you'll be looking at his baseball reference 10 years from now, and it's going to be like, well, what happened? Everyone's going to sit there and say, what happened in 2026? Because he's probably going to end the year with an ERA under 2.5. You know, I mean, if it's above 2.5, I think some things go wrong. And you're going to say, how was that guy not an All-Star? And by the way, Tucker, he's probably going to finish top five in Cy Young again. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's almost like you see it more with hitters, you know, and maybe we saw it with Howard. You know, Ryan Howard did not make the All-Star team and then won the MVP. Harper did not make the All-Star team in 2021, and then he won the MVP. So I feel like you
Rollins
see it
didn't make it the year he won MVP either. His last All-Star season was 2005.
Who needs the All-Star game? It's a bunch of hogwash anyway. But man, it really irks me. It really irks me that once again it feels like Wheels is getting passed over. But regardless, he was dominant tonight. And a game where you lose 15-1, there's a lot of chatter around the city of, you know, them limping into the All-Star break. Kind of the Royal Series felt a little bit like that A's series before the 24 All-Star break. Now, obviously the A's team was disgusting. Well, not disgusting. They had much more power prowess to them.
Have you seen what the Royals are up to tonight?
So at one point, I know they got it back to 9-9. What's it at now?
They're up 16-12 going into the ninth inning.
That sounds like a game.
Some fireworks over there in Queens.
Sounds like a game I probably would have took the under on. I mean, knowing my gambling track record. But So him just able to come out tonight and set the tone early, clearly being peeved about the All-Star game, clearly being peeved at Mattingly for the last game against the Pirates, and going and shoving, and, you know, 14 strikeouts is so the fact that that's only happened six times in franchise history feels off. Like it's impressive, obviously, but it just feels like I feel like I've just seen it before, but I guess when he gets to the 14 strikeout, he did tie his career high tonight. I just assumed it was higher, but for the great Zach Wheeler performances, I mean, that was up there. That was up there. So,
do you know the other five who have done it?
Did Bunning do it?
Yes.
Bunning did it. Schilling.
Yep.
Cliff Lee.
Yes.
Hamels.
No.
Damn. Carlton.
Nope.
Really? Robert?
It's one guy who you would say, okay, I guess. And it's another guy who you'd be shocked to hear his name. But when you do, you go, okay, that makes sense.
Because it wouldn't be, like, Halliday feels too obvious, but I don't think Halliday did it.
No, it's, he pitched with Schilling.
Terry Mulholland? Tommy Green? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Terry Mulholland.
Wow.
And then
wow.
The most recent one you're missing.
Vince Velasquez.
Vince Velasquez, 2016.
Never a doubt. Dude, I know that we're sponsored by Miller Lite. I love Miller Lite. But this is college days. For some reason, I got oddly into the 2016 Phillies. And because to be completely honest, you know, during that time period, I was like playing baseball. I just like college, you kind of just like they were there, but it wasn't like I was locked in every night. So like the 14 Phillies, like when they got AJ Burnett, I was in one of my classes. I was super hyped. And he was a dud, obviously. 14, 15 Phillies, like very, very hit or miss. 16 Phillies, pretty locked. I remember I picked up a case of PBR for that game. I had this old school recliner in our college apartment, kicked the old feet up, skipped all my afternoon classes, and watched a Vince Velasquez masterclass. And in a just truly disgusting fashion, did text my buddies and say, hey, you know, Velasquez might be, reminds me a little bit of like the Mets staff when they had Syndergaard and DeGrom and all those guys.
He was nasty the first like 6 weeks.
I know. He's still pitching, by the way. So I think he's in the Cubs organization now. So,
really?
Yeah, he's hanging on by a thread, but Vinny Velo is still out there, a hero.
He's made two appearances for the Cubs this year.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the same thing he always does. So other things that kind of stuck out tonight, Kirkering, almost Kirkeringed it on up. He tried his best. What'd you think about that play at second base? First off, I've never seen a bench coach go out there and get tossed like Bobby Dickerson
did. Like the umpire must have said something about Bobby Dickerson's mom or like just something really off the wall that upset him that much. I've never seen like any assistant coach, like outside of like if you're a first or third base coach already on the field, I've never seen an assistant coach come from the dugout onto the field with that kind of fire before.
Oh, it was amazing. They and then Caleb Cotham. I don't even need the John Boy. I don't need the lip reading. I know exactly what he said.
That was clear.
He said BS over and over again. He flipped in a bleeping BS. He was hot. And that play makes no sense to me from a baseball standpoint. I don't understand how it's okay. Now, if you're making a turn, I think that's different. I don't think Ellie De La Cruz is making a turn. I think he was running straight through the bag, which is a huge issue because you don't want the second baseman to just rear back and fire it right at someone running into the bag. Like you're basically playing a game of chicken. And I don't think that's a safe way to go about baseball. So I was surprised that they kept it that way. I mean, you seem like more of a rules guy than I do. But baseball-wise, that seemed insane to me.
It's just an awkward thing to see, right? Like, it's an awkward thing to see a guy run through second base like that. And I get what they said on the broadcast, and the umpire said you can't technically challenge for abandonment, which... Like, abandonment usually comes into play, like, you didn't touch home plate, you walk back to the dugout, they rule you out. He didn't really do that, because if you watch, like, after he ran through the bag, he did turn around and go back. So, it's kind of a gray area there. It wasn't really obstruction, because I don't think he ever really made contact with Stott. So, it was just, like, an awkward-looking play, and I don't think anyone else had ever really seen anything like that or really knew how to react or how to score it. And I agree with you, like, it seems sort of unsafe, and for a sport that's taken really all the violence out of the base paths in the last two decades, chances are, if this happens again or, becomes a trend, they probably, outlaw it pretty quickly in the offseason, though they probably have some other issues to work on this offseason before we get to weird base running rules. But
yeah.
I don't know. I also wonder if that maybe messed up Kirkering a little bit, too, because he had to stand there on the mound for like 10 minutes trying to figure out if he was done or if he had to go back and pitch. And the other thing, the Phillies, they got the calls correct because they were challenged a bunch, but there were like five or six calls the last three innings where it seemed like they got a huge strike call and the Reds challenged and it was wrong. It was a pretty rough day behind the plate for the umpire.
I was going to bring it up. I don't think I've seen a umpire challenge as much as Malachi Moore got challenged tonight. It felt like two an inning.
It has to be bad for his confidence. Like after that, by the fourth or fifth inning, he has to be second guessing himself.
Like I did feel like you could hear his voice dying as the night went on. Early, he still had the
cockiness. Strike calls got slower. he was doing a lot of dramatic pauses before big strike calls.
Well, early in the game, he would get on the mic, he'd be like, the Reds challenging this call. And then by the seventh or eighth inning, it was like, the Reds are challenging this. So, in a way, I felt for Malachi Moore, but also we got to lock back in. We got to lock in back there. So, yeah, no, I could totally see it messing Kirkring up, but it's also not like he had his best stuff before that. So
no, he put himself in that situation.
He did. And you would hope that maybe there's some warm-up pitches going on while that was going, while the whole situation was falling apart there. I did appreciate was Alonso Marquez basically just said, yeah, we'll let New York decide this one. He took all the responsibility of the game out of his hands. And he's like, what are they saying?
It's such a great failsafe. Like, we'll just go to the league office and then you can't get mad at me anymore.
Let's go to Secaucus. Let's go to Secaucus and see what they got up there. Let's see if they can figure it out because we got nothing. But yeah, because what's interesting is that the Royals did that yesterday. And that was the first time. Well, not the first time, but I feel like I hadn't seen it very often where you just keep running. But in that play, it was a force play at second to get the third out in an inning.
Right.
Where you can like make the case of, and he made a direct turn. Elly De La Cruz just ran right at Bryson Stott. And I think it was interesting watching Bryson Stott as the whole thing was going on, talking to De La Cruz. He was like, feeling his chest.
Yeah, he started pumping his chest because he was you're scared. The guy's like 6'7".
It's hard to miss him. I mean, he's huge. So that does not feel like a legal play. I don't know. Obviously, like you said, they have much bigger fish to fry.
They can sit around talking about if you're allowed to run through second base this offseason. That's great.
We'll get to the salary cap, but let's talk about the real issue facing baseball right now, and that is these guys just running face first into second base. Like someone's gonna get the black eye. It's crazy. Like they're just gonna throw right at him. So man, that was one of the weirder things I've seen on the baseball field. But as always, every team feels like they're trying to find every single advantage they can, and maybe this is the new market inefficiency. Is running headfirst into second base.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so a couple of things. By the way, John Bolin, big, big spot getting out of it. Eugenio did hit a home run earlier in the game. He has not had the year that obviously he had last year for the D-backs and Mariners, although he kind of fell off a cliff when he went to the Mariners last year. Still, he's a power threat. He had a big hit for Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic. So he's a veteran, been around for a while. And, Bolin, one of the things that has kind of worried me with him this year is I do feel like in the big moments, he kind of shrinks a little bit. And I thought that was a big confidence booster for him. For him to go a 3-2 sweeper and had the conviction to throw it, I thought was really, really impressive. But, you know, you look at Kirkring, you look at Bolin, when Keller comes back, who is the guy that you're going to in like the seventh if you have a lead? Is it Bolin or is it Kirkring? And it does feel like Bolin is pitching his way into being that guy for this team, because Kirkring, really the last month is just so, when he's hot, he's hot, but there's been a good amount of cold streaks here for Orion, and Bolin may have leaped him in the bullpen hierarchy.
Yeah, I don't know if you feel this way, but like when Kirkring pitches well, it almost flies under the radar.
I know.
Like, I'll look up and be like, oh, he has an ERA of 1.5 this month. And then when he blows up, he really blows up. Like tonight he had 3 walks on, you know, only 2/3 of an inning. But yeah, I mean, I think the bullpen, as you get closer to the trade deadline and we kind of talk about what this team needs, I think when you look at playoff baseball and, you know, if starters are going less innings and you only really have DeRon that you can count on in the ninth inning, you know, really going after another high leverage reliever who you could put in the 6th, 7th, 8th, maybe, you know, probably from the left side, because you have nobody right there who you can trust to get big outs, especially not Jose Alvarado right now. You know, that really is an underrated need, I think, for the team. As we talk about finding a 4th starter or maybe another outfielder bat, I mean, having a guy who can come in a big moment in the 7th inning and get somebody out from the left side, or even from the right side, right? Because, you know, Brad Keller's going to come back, but Brad Keller wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire before he got hurt. I mean, you have a lot of guys out there in the bullpen right now who you might be able to trust, but, you know, come October, I don't really know if you trust anybody outside of DeRon.
Yeah, the name that just keeps jumping out, because if you add him to this bullpen, it goes to a super pen pretty quickly, is Chapman. I mean,
it's exactly what they need.
If you add Aroldis Chapman to this team, really, if they could just make one trade with the Red Sox and get Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, and Aroldis Chapman, they would win the World Series. Like, I feel pretty confident that if they might not win the World Series, but that would give you about as good of a chance as you could possibly have. Now, that's not that realistic, because those guys are going to cost a ton and would really, really deplete your farm system. But I could definitely see Dave. If I know Dave Dombrowski, like I think I know Dave Dombrowski, the idea of going Chapman to Ron in the 8th, 9th has to entice him. Just has to. He's everything they need. They could bring him in the 7th if they want to, in an Alvarado spot, and then give Keller the 8th. And it shortens the game. And I know Chapman has done a lot of 9ths, but it's not like he has never done the 7th, 8th inning thing before. And he's 37. Like, he knows how to pitch at this level. Like, it will not be that big of a concern. He does have the mutual option after this year. Now, mutual options are a sham. No,
I've never seen a mutual option picked up.
So the last one was Aramis Ramirez in 2014, I believe. It was either 2012 or 2014, but Aramis Ramirez, because I remember getting super into it with Harrison Bader, thinking that we were going to get the nice mutual option. I was like, well, he has an option. And then I'm like, well, it's a mutual option. What's that mean? Oh, it literally never gets picked up because there's never.
Well, at least one side isn't satisfied.
Yeah, like there's never just a mutual coming together of like, ah, this is a good idea.
I guess you're worth $10 million. I guess I am. All right.
Yeah, all right, great. Perfect. We don't need to negotiate at all. Actually, sounds like how I negotiate anything I do at work. It's like, yeah, this is fair. I'll do it. Okay.
Sure, I don't care.
Yeah. Aramis Ramirez, I was thinking about him yesterday. Underrated mid-2000s bat, Aramis Ramirez. Just raked for a good 6 to 8 year period.
All over the NL Central, right? Pittsburgh,
dominated.
Chicago, Milwaukee.
Dominated the NL Central. Chicago, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee. Never ended up on the Cardinals. But yeah, he was the machine of the Midway, as I'm sure they called him back in the day. All right, some other things. It was good to see Schwarber just launch a baseball again. It was one of those ones, Tucker, where now I feel like you're not a big golf guy, but I can see you being like a top golf
guy.
No,
I golf.
Okay. It was one of those ones where it just looked like he teed it up and just smoke the driver. And we talked about this morning, how he has not hit a home run since June 28th, which you were nice enough to put in the chat. So it was his longest homerless streak of the season for him. 7 games. What a loser.
I think he went 6 before that game. So he only had 1 in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he did go. The last one was 6. But good to see him get off the schneid and hit one out. And it was a bomb. Harper is certainly going through one of those little mini slumps that happen during a baseball season. But it was good to see Schwarber at least hit the ball at the ballpark with authority and not. I do have a fear of his back and that kind of creeping up and becoming an issue. But at least for one night, it did not look like an issue with Kyle Schwarber.
No, and you know, on the TV broadcast, they kept bringing up, like, he doesn't swing 3-0 ever, right? Like, he's almost an automatic take. So I wonder if he also kind of felt that he hadn't been hitting with power recently. I mean, he had to know he hasn't had a home run in over a week. So it kind of felt like, you know, Abbott kind of laid a fastball in the upper half of the zone, and he was ready for it and just turned on it. I mean, it was out in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And then final thing here, not for nothing, but it needs to be pointed out, is that Alex McFarland touched over 100 again tonight up in Reading and worked a scoreless inning as you're watching Orion Kirkering struggle to get through an inning and, you know, we're having questions about the bullpen. If only there was someone who had premium stuff that they tried to transition from a reliever into a starter, and then he got Tommy John, and he's worked his way back from it, and the velocity is back, and he looks like a real late-inning weapon. If only one of those guys was just sitting in the minor leagues waiting to get moved even to AAA, but nevertheless, why help the major league team when maybe he could?
I mean, do you think he's like just trade bait at this point? Like that's how they view him?
100%. It's the only thing that makes sense because there's no reason for him not to be at AAA. They're worried about him getting subjected to the AAA balls. So if he goes up to AAA and he gets hit around, then all of a sudden it's like, wow, like this is what we thought about Alex McFarland this entire time. So yes, I think that is strictly keeping him in AA.
Keeping his numbers inflated.
Keeping the numbers as good as they can be with the minor league baseballs. And we'll see what it nets them in a trade. Now, if he's here, I cannot wait to see post-trade deadline, if he's still here, how quickly he is in Lehigh Valley. like just how within milliseconds after August 3rd, trade deadline probably what, 4 o'clock, maybe 6 o'clock.
They might as well just tell him, like, pack your bags because you're not going to be in Reading any longer after 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, last year it was 6 o'clock, which was incredibly annoying because it was leading into a Phillies game rather than just, hey, let's make it 4 o'clock so we can react to it a little bit. Let's
talk a little bit about it.
Let's think about the radio hosts out there one time. Think about the radio hosts. So, yes, the Alex McFarland thing is driving me crazy.
Yeah, it's 6 p.m. again tonight or this year.
Of course. Yes. That's smart. Great. That's brilliant. Anyway, hopefully the Phillies don't play that day, but I'm not sure. It's not the end of the world. Well, Tucker, it was a good, pretty odd in the end type win, but wheels is wheels, and Juwan Duran is now 86 saves away from passing Jonathan Papelbon for the Phillies' all-time saves record. That's going to do it for us. Tucker, do you have anything else you want to close out with, or we'll just talk to you tomorrow night?
I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
So we're going to do a post-game pod tomorrow, post-game pod Thursday. We'll see about the full pod on Friday. Some conflicting rumors from behind the scenes as to whether or not we can record. If not, Saturday we're on the radio 2 to 5:30 in the heart of the MLB draft. And speaking of that, I will be signing off from here and immediately doing some mock draft simulators as we get fully locked in for the 2026 MLB draft. So for Tucker Bagley and Jack Fritz, this has been another edition of the High Hopes Podcast.
as the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup. Make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.